Hello and welcome back to the Layover Podcast. We are in the... I always forget that we're not allowed to mention where we are in a season. Because with this season, that's a spoiler. But we are in a point in this season.
We're certainly at a point in the season. No one could deny that.
Mm-hmm. And this is episode 4. And it's my turn for a brief moment.
A very brief run for Sam.
I mean, well,
you made some real progress.
I made some ground.
I feel like it was a little truncated in the episode, but you got pretty far.
You made some real distance.
Honestly, I made it further than at times I thought I would, because there were plenty of early moments that looked like, I mean, what was really tough, arguing on my behalf.
As is your right.
As is my right. What's tough about my run, first of all, starting very, very deep into territory, but it was also tough that there was basically one route out of, what was that, Emden?
Well, there were two. You could have gone through Germany or the Netherlands.
Not easily. No. I'm talking about like the initial train.
Oh,
like
the first train. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I had to spend a lot of coins to get anywhere useful where I'd have any degree of optionality. And like optionality is the thing that leads to, you know, a runner being able to make some ground and lose the chasers and stuff. But like I didn't have any optionality for a while. So I had to spend a lot of budget and get to a situation where I had to earn budget very soon before I'm able to make any moves that could gain me ground. So that was a little tough.
Well, you also were in a pretty unfortunate position because you overbooked yourself the first time. You bought a ticket all the way to Munster, but then you only went to Salzburgen.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as is the rule, which again, this is something I think we would have changed if we were changing rules, but we decided to keep everything the same. If you book a ticket for longer than you use it, you still have to pay for the whole ticket. Now, I think in retrospect, we don't like that rule and would change it. But because we were not in the business of changing rules, that still applied. So you, I think, would have saved yourself a good number of coins if you had actually just booked the distance that you took.
Yeah, it wasn't a massive difference, I don't think, in the end. But I mean, it certainly was not an insignificant amount of budget that I lost with that. Ultimately, like, it was a small tactical blunder. But the truth is, like, I had to pretty much book it straight to the train to get out of Emden. So I didn't really have time to research. And, you know, the thing that we're not allowed to do in the rules is, like, book the train a portion of the distance and then decide I'm going to book the second portion later, because that's basically exploiting this rule. So, like, I think how we would play it is, like, if you book a short segment, you can't just keep riding the train. You have to get off, and therefore you have to bump back to the train before. So with a lack of time to do any, you know, research or to find this route prior to getting to the station, I don't know if there's truly much I could do differently. Ideally, in a perfect world, I would have identified this route prior to my run starting. But as I think we mentioned last episode, I was trying to on the ride up to Emden, but the cell service was so bad on that train segment that I was really struggling to do any meaningful research. So it was disappointing, but ultimately, like, I can't be that disappointed in something where I'm not really sure how I could have done it differently. But what was more disappointing was, as is, I feel now, tradition, a very bad first card pull.
Yeah, that was not, I mean, you really do get unlucky more often than certainly the average amount that you would expect is, right? It has to be true.
I'm sure some data nerd could run the numbers and give me a statistical answer, but it sure feels like it. That's what I'll say. Do you have something to say, Ben? You were opening your mouth.
I was breathing.
Leave that in. Leave that in. Leave that in the podcast.
There are other ways to do that. You have other holes.
Other holes? That's a really weird way to phrase that.
Okay, sorry. It's true. Anyways, so like, yeah, the Ratatouille challenge was tough because once I gave it enough thought, I really didn't have an option. I had to veto it. I mean, I think it's explained decently well in the episode, but like, it was like a objective 1 in 4 shot of being able to make my journey onward, versus a far better shot than that if I just vetoed it and try to do a challenge later.
That was a really bad place to pull it. Like,
yeah,
you were in a really small state. Like, if you had pulled that in like Paris or something, Mm-hmm. It would have been very easy to just get around it.
Easy, yeah. Just take a metro. Yeah. Even just like if I was down in like Munster,
right.
You know, I could have, you know, more easily like found a bus or something to make that distance. And there's, you know, more options of train routes. Here, it was literally just north up to you guys, south on your train, west as was my plan, or east where there was no train route.
Yeah. I mean, even if you had been at a station, as you sort of mentioned, that had like scooters or bikes, because you only had to go 2 miles. But mm-hmm. I mean, 2 miles. And I remember us discussing this. We had landed on 2 miles because we were like, it's a distance where you could run it or bike it, but it would be quite annoying to run it. It would be pretty annoying to bike it. And it would be like quite fast to do it on a train, which was like the right balance.
Well, also, if you had chosen to like run it or maybe even bike it, we probably would have arrived.
Yeah, we would have arrived and gotten you, I think.
Not if I was in my true running form.
Of course.
I can give you my mile times if you want.
Of course.
I had time.
Your mile times for what?
I could have run 4 miles round trip in 30 minutes.
Yeah, I would think so.
That's crazy.
7:30 pace. Yeah, that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, the backpack would have been a challenge, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. With the backpack, that would have made it harder.
But it wouldn't have been far off. I had slightly more than 30 minutes, too.
Mm-hmm.
I had like 35 or 40, I think.
Mm.
But anyways, in this situation, it would have been tenuous, to be honest. But I probably still would have vetoed it just because it would have been a bit of a crapshoot. And I knew that, you know, thanks to this sort of like route that I had identified the episode prior, I knew that the advantage of this route was that I would have these small pockets of time for some challenges on my transfers. And I had a good number of transfers. And I knew that once I got into the Netherlands, there was far more like optionality of train routes. So I wasn't that concerned, but it was pretty disappointing because that was my biggest like transfer window, my biggest amount of time, and it became useless. But yeah, headed over to Hengelo was the first stop. And what do y'all do? Y'all get on a train.
And then we hang out in Salzburgen for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, we got our gummy worms. I do want to take a minute, and I think the podcast is a perfect place to talk more about the gummy worms. Because obviously the bit of the snack zone is that our review is always one sentence. And it was Ben's sentence, which is a great one, which is, it feels like I'm eating a real animal. But I do just want to say, it was fascinating to me. We got the sour glow worm gin, how different they were from Trolley gummy worms in America. They are a completely different texture. They're much denser and chewier.
Yeah.
Heavier, a lighter sprinkling of the sour powder.
I like them better.
I do think they are slightly better. Yeah. But that was delicious.
In my experience, European candy is superior.
Well, all of the best American like gummies are made in Europe.
Yeah. But like, there's some very good Haribos. I remember when I lived in France being semi-addicted to, I think it was the Dragobo candies.
Does anybody know how that company is pronounced? Because I feel like I hear it every different way and I have no idea. Is it Haribo, Haribo, Hari? Like, what is the pronunciation?
I don't know.
Manny, do you have any idea?
I've always known it as Haribo. It's Haribo, my girlfriend says.
Haribo.
It's Haribo?
Manny's girlfriend says it's Haribo.
I've never heard that one. That's a whole new one for me.
It's French. Haribo. I don't know. Something like that.
I thought it was German.
Manny, does your girlfriend have any authority on this topic, or is she just...
Is she just popping in there talking out of her ass, or does she know the answer to this?
I mean, you know, I would never say that she's talking out of her ass, because I'm a smart man.
That's true.
But sounds right.
I can confirm Haribo is German.
It's not French. I'm talking out of my ass. Let's say that.
Okay, great. All right. Well, I'm sure that a lot of people will tweet at us with information about the pronunciation, and that'll be good. But yeah, I don't know. So we got on the train. Once again, we were in first class and nobody else was there, and headed to Salzburgen.
That's the thing. Have we talked about this weird thing?
I don't know where, even like, if we have talked about it.
All of the trains have first class cars, but they're all empty because Europeans are never in the first class cars because it's not worth getting first class tickets. But getting a first class Eurail pass as a foreigner
it's barely more expensive.
Like 30 or 40 extra bucks for the whole time.
Yeah. And so it makes it so that we can film without bothering people, which is the key.
But on these regional trains, it's like literally like the same seats with like different color.
It is genuinely, it's like the same seats, but they're different colors. Sometimes there's like a little glass door that closes and encloses you in first class, which is like,
mm-hmm.
just keeps the riffraff out, you know?
There were several times where I was sitting not in first class, and then like the German train conductor would like escort me to first class. And I always thought I was in trouble.
What?
But they were always just like, no, like you can sit in first class. And I was like, it's just another car on the train. It was weird. Anyway.
This has never happened to me.
This happened to me twice.
Then this reminds me of you like having your Nintendo Switch stolen on the plane by a German. I think you need to just be more authoritative.
Germans take advantage of me all the time.
Yeah.
And the French. The Europeans in general, they see me and they think, I can make them do anything.
Yeah.
The thing is that they're right, though. You've proven them right time and time again.
You need to prove them wrong.
I mean, you know, I feel like they often have my best interests at heart. Not the guy who took my Switch on the plane. I tweeted about this. When I was flying back from Europe, the German guy sitting next to me on the plane was like, hey, I was like playing on my Switch. And he was like, can it be my turn? And I was like, sure. And he just played with it for the rest of the flight. It was crazy. Anyway,
I mean, there's so many different point, like
it's truly an incredible, unbelievable situation.
It's just a wild story from every angle. It's crazy for him to ask you for a turn. It's crazy for you to say yes. It's crazy for him to not stop playing. It's crazy for you to not ask him if you can have it back. Both of you in that situation were making wild choices.
Put yourself in that situation. What was I couldn't have been like, no.
Clearly, he's established that you're taking turns. So I think you could have been like, okay, it's my turn.
His turn might have just been really long. He might have just had a really long turn.
I think you need to tell him when his turn is over.
So
I feel like what you do in that situation is you sort of laugh it off like it's a joke. You just go like, oh, yeah, sure. Maybe in a little bit. And then you just ignore him.
Don't pretend like you wouldn't have given him your Switch. You would have given him your Switch.
I would not have.
Done it. I really don't think I would have.
No one is putting themselves really in my shoes here. Everyone would have given. Because it was like I was, you know, stunlocked. I was like, I don't have like.
This is exactly the same as last season when a random person asked you for your water bottle.
Right.
When you were in Belgium and you just gave it to them.
Yeah, because it's like, I don't have a response prepared for this situation.
The response is no, Ben. No. The response is no. Just say no.
My default is yes, and I didn't think about no.
Look, Ben, here's the thing. If you want to make the argument of like, this is just how I handle things, that's one thing. But you are instead making the argument that everyone in your situation, that you did the only possible thing. And that to me is just not true.
I can't imagine doing anything else is what I'll say.
Had you interacted with this German prior?
This man? No.
Oh, okay. I just wanted clarifying. Like that would help explain it in my mind.
No.
And I'm still just dumbfounded.
I had not spoken to him.
Yeah. If you guys sort of like were buddies.
Yeah.
We were not.
Okay. Sorry. We get to Salzburgen.
It's very hot.
Oh my God. Yes.
It's sort of oppressively hot. And again, Germany is not equipped for this.
I wouldn't even say sort of.
Yeah, I would say I got off the train in Salzburgen and I was like, holy shit, like what has happened? Also just because that train station was like not shielded by any shade. It was all concrete. Like it was extremely hot just on that platform.
I mean, to be clear, it was thermometer temperature, 96 degrees.
Yeah.
So just like imagine, I mean, I assume that, you know, everyone is American. So like imagine, you know, a 96 degree day.
Fahrenheit, obviously.
Yeah, Fahrenheit. A lot of people have experienced that in places with air conditioning.
Right.
And they still suck. But this is a place without air conditioning anywhere. So there's no escape.
Yeah.
You're just in it. No matter if you're in the train, in a store, in the shade, in the sun, whatever.
It was bad.
It was hot.
Oh, a fun little tidbit about that train stop is, you know, the giant, like, old-timey train that was there?
Yes.
Ben and I took bets on what we thought you said when you saw it. And my guess was that you said, I like trains. And Ben's guess, do you remember what your guess was, Ben?
Choo-choo?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Ben guessed that you said choo-choo.
What did I say?
And that is not what you said. You said something that was neither of those things. And that was also just sort of generic. I think you just were like, oh, wow, that's a cool train.
Yeah.
We cut all this out because this is a good example of like when we have a lot of really fun like moments in the edit of like us predicting what someone's going to do or whatever. Like there are also times where we're wrong. So like if we had been right, it would have been a great moment in the edit. But we were wrong, so it's just not in the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I did a little city tour because I knew that, you know, y'all would also probably do one because we had the same gap between trains, but you didn't have a challenge to do. But to be honest, mine was really boring because I think I was just not in a very, like, entertaining mood after getting ratatouille so early. And I also, like, fundamentally, I think the issue was just, like, I got to it and it's like, it's like a tiny, tiny town. There was like one thing open, that place with all the German people that heckled y'all or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was like the only remnant.
Did you get heckled by those same German people?
No, because I looked assertive. You know, sure. They didn't think that they could, you know, steal my Switch or.
Yeah, yeah. This also did not make it in the edit, but the only like restaurant there was packed full of like young German men.
The most terrifying.
All in the same outfits, all in like white dress shirts.
Yeah.
It was like the Boy Scouts, but like they're big German men.
Yeah.
Was it like the army? I don't know.
Which is like Boy Scouts, but big German men. Not a good history.
Historically,
yeah, bad vibes.
Sort of.
Well, and you know, we talk a lot about history in this episode. You know,
we do.
We're really covering the historical context of the idea of Germany.
Yeah. I will say, you know, with this departure from Germany that we're now doing, as not thrilling the experience in Germany this season was for me personally, Germany is one of the European countries that I've explored the least and certainly kind of the more off the beaten track locations in Germany. So it was nice to get a little bit more of a glimpse into that part. I think what's striking for me about the country is like, to me, at least, it feels so different than like France and the Netherlands and Belgium, which I feel like, maybe this is controversial, but I feel like when you get out in the burbs in those countries, they feel more similar to each other. Whereas like Germany, it's like, it's very like, you know, industrious and like straight to it.
Sure.
Is the area that we were in.
Sure. Yes. I think that's probably right.
So I take a train to the Netherlands. And then what did y'all do?
We also took a train to the Netherlands. Ben, do you want to tell them what happened?
Okay. So there's this crazy thing where we're like, this train has no air conditioning. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to us. But then we were like joking. We were like, haha, maybe when the train enters the Netherlands, it'll become a new train with air conditioning. And I'm not joking. The train pulls into the station before the Netherlands, turns off, turns back on with air conditioning, and continues into the Netherlands.
It was pretty unbelievable. Unfortunately, it did not make the cut because we didn't have the original footage of us saying, like, maybe it'll have air conditioning. We just have the footage of us realizing it has air conditioning now. And we do get very excited, but we couldn't believe it.
No.
It was really an incredible moment.
It was a miracle.
I mean, it is baffling. My only guess would be, like, a lot of train sets can do, like, diesel mode and electric mode if they're designed to operate in places where there might be electric wires some places, but not in other places.
Certainly.
I wonder if for some reason, like one of those modes can do air conditioning and one can't. Because that's definitely the, you know, a cross-border situation where one country has electric, one doesn't. Like, I don't know. I don't know if we should explain it. Maybe that breaks the magic of it, but that's my best guess. But it is baffling.
It was just incredible to go from like, I was like, I can't wait to get to the Netherlands. It's supposed to be such an incredible country. And the truly the moment we arrive in the Netherlands, all of a sudden we have air conditioning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was also very excited to get in the Netherlands just because like when playing these games, I actually personally prefer to be in more familiar places. Like it's really nice to see the less familiar places, but like I'm so in game mode that like I want the grocery stores that I kind of am more used to, the language that I'm more used to, the train geography that I'm more used to and all that. And I have been in the Netherlands. I've gone to the Netherlands a good bit. So it certainly felt like that to me. So I was like really excited just for that reason to be back in the Netherlands. And Adam, it was your first time there, right?
It was my first time there and I was so excited to go. And it really was very cool there.
Yeah.
I had always wanted to go to the Netherlands. It was like, frankly, the number one place I wanted to go in Europe. And so it was very exciting to me to get to see it and to experience it through the train system, one of the best in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a lot of what I like about the Netherlands, like Amsterdam's great, but Amsterdam is such a scene. But I think what's really striking about the country is just how consistently nice it is throughout, in my experience. Like, I had the most delightful time. It was actually only a couple weeks after we filmed this season in the far, far south of the Netherlands. I was going to the Belgian Grand Prix. Hey, Formula One reference. People will get excited by that.
Hey.
We don't talk about Formula enough anymore. But I was down near, like, Maastricht. So it's, like, the far, far south of the country where you're right on the border between Netherlands, Belgium, and Germany. And that area is delightful because it's, believe it or not, it's the Netherlands hill country, and they have legitimate hills there. They're small, but like it's like rolling hills. So it's the most like idyllic spot where you have all these like little hotels and restaurants and nice little cafes dotted in these tiny towns that are all connected by amazing bike infrastructure and trails and farms dotted in between.
Just like America.
Yeah, that's exactly how I describe America. But highly recommended. And like what was amazing, I'm really just advocating on behalf of this region's tourism. But what was amazing is like I was staying in the Netherlands, would drive down into Belgium to go to the Grand Prix, and then would like drive to Germany for dinner. Because it's like such a tiny little hodgepodge there. And like they're genuinely speaking different languages and the food's different and all that. It's not like it's a, you know, just arbitrary border that doesn't have any consequences. It's like each country is acting like itself in such a tight area. Fascinating. Anyways, I know to Europeans, maybe this is a lot less fascinating, but the American mind cannot imagine bike infrastructure, different languages.
The American mind cannot comprehend.
Yeah. Anyways, but back to the far north of the Netherlands, or the middle, actually, I guess, of the Netherlands, Hengelo. What did I do in Hengelo? Oh, I found the town hall. Oh, this was like my proudest moment.
This was a huge moment for you.
Mm-hmm. I was really excited because this was my challenge suggestion because like what I find fascinating about, I mean, I think we, did we talk about this on camera or was this off camera? No, we talked about this in the podcast before, how like every French town has the exact same.
Yes. Yeah. How every French town. Yes. Because as you say on camera, you suggested this challenge.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And France sort of like inspired this, but it's kind of the same deal in the rest of Europe where like, it's not like they're all the same thing, but the geography is like somewhat predictable because, you know, they tend to have that central node where you have like the train station, some churches, the town hall, library, kind of all like the public infrastructure,
right,
or like the public services rather. So I thought it would be the right level of like something that you could decently do, but would still be challenging. And honestly, this went exactly how I would have hoped from like a challenge design perspective.
I mean, it played out very well from a challenge perspective, without a doubt. It was like the perfect level of difficulty.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this town, I would say, I was concerned when I first saw it because it was a lot less. If I was in a French town, this would have been so, so easy. At least for me, having been to a bajillion French towns. But like Netherlands, I mean, I've been to it, but certainly not to nearly the same level. And it was just a much more confusing geography without like a massive, you know, plaza or something, like a massive square that I was going to be on. So I was concerned and there was definitely some luck involved. But the real key, and I think this is reasonably clear, the real key was when I noticed tower, but no religious symbols.
Right. Yes.
Because like the only other explanation is town hall. I don't know if this made it on camera, but one thing that also led to a higher degree of confidence was realizing that this town hall actually looks weirdly, like, not that close, but kind of similar to Stockholm's city hall.
Yeah, I think that was cut, but I do think I remember you mentioning that.
Yeah, but, like, it's not exactly the same, but, like, in terms of having that tower, and, like, it's clear if you look at this town hall where, like, the second, you know, you have those big windows that are clearly, like, a big event space. I know that a lot of European town halls are much more, like, focused on being able to host big events. In Stockholm, that big event is the Nobel Prize ceremony.
Sure.
Fun fact, which is why that town hall is famous. But anyway, I was very proud and it came in the nick of time and it led to me being able to keep going. So that was exciting. It certainly made up for the Ratatouille challenge.
Poor Ratatouille. Poor Ratatouille challenge. But yeah, that was, I mean, you nailed that. Barely made it back in time. I mean, I think it's also important to be clear about the stakes of that. Like, if you hadn't found it, you would have gotten caught. almost certainly right there.
I mean, GG, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a moderate amount of time. I could maybe have tried another... Actually, I forget. Was it automatic veto if you failed?
Yep. It was an automatic veto. That was the thing. So if you had failed, you couldn't have gone anywhere for 30 minutes. And I think we would have just gotten there straight up.
Yeah. So that probably, would have been GG. I think I probably would not have... Well, actually... Wait, are you sure it was automatic veto?
It was an automatic veto. If you did not complete it, I believe it was an automatic veto.
Let me pull up the card just to be sure.
I'm almost certain. I don't even know if you realized that at the time.
Maybe I didn't, yeah.
Yeah, because you kind of weren't acting like if you didn't do it, that it was an automatic catch. But I believe it was, in fact, an automatic veto.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Anyway, yeah, so that would have been, that would have been full GG, which would have been tough. That would have been even more disappointing of a run. But yeah, pulled it through. And it's hard to remember this episode. I mean, actually, I remember from basically the first step in any post-production for any season is we get together and basically talk through the chronology from each of our perspectives so that everyone's up to speed on everything that happens, since, of course, we only see our POV during the game. I remember when discussing this, it was so hard to remember just because of all these short trains to towns with weird names.
Right, yeah, trying to be like, I went here, then here, because there's so many quick little jumps.
Mm-hmm. But came to Zutphen.
Zutphen.
This was the first spot where I encountered the perpetually difficult thing about the Netherlands, where they don't take credit cards.
Mm.
And I know a lot of people complain about this actually for Nebula subscriptions. If any of you are annoyed Dutch people wondering why we can't take various non-credit card solutions for payment, we have very much looked into it. But the problem is that building in alternate payment systems to Nebula is just massively, massively expensive and more complex than one might think. But in our situation, it was difficult because I was dying of thirst in the heat and I could not get water because I didn't have a credit card.
They took debit cards, though. Do you not have a debit card?
Yeah, and like Apple Pay.
Yeah, I didn't realize that at the time. I realized after that that was the solution.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had to go find cash quickly. But I got rehydrated, which was good because I was on the brink of death. Because I had run out of water and I had done that run around Hengelo in the massive heat. I'd sweated out all of my water and I had no more to drink. Mm-mm. So it was a quick necessity. But anyway, Zutphen, this was thrilling too, to pull this challenge with a double up. This is the biggest moment because this is very similar to like a couple episodes we discussed, Adam, how you pulled Amy's Trivia Corner and how that's a...
It's a very good
perfect
card.
Card.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
And this is a very good card for the exact same reason.
Exactly.
Because
no veto.
No risk. No veto. You just get coins.
Yep.
That's easy.
And a pretty high ceiling on it too. Like it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, with a double up, you could get as much as 4,000 coins.
Yeah. The real difficulty was the provision that we wrote in about the 50 years, being able to get a confident answer within 50 years. Because this town was really lucky for this. Like there was a lot of old stuff in this town. Like even within this range within the Netherlands, it felt like this town was particularly well suited for this. It was also a lovely town. I don't know how much you really see in this, but like it was a very cool spot to kind of, you know, just meander through for, you know, 15 minutes or whatever. Especially I think because it was like the old quarter district neighborhood, whatever was right by the train station, which was lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, lovely spot. Highly recommend it.
I realized later on that we should have just written the card differently. And we should have just said, if you cannot verify the exact year, you have to assume it is the least old possible given whatever existing range there is. Because that would have opened us up a lot. And it would have just been like, look, like if you can only verify this within 100 years, but they know that it's from the years 700 to 800, you just have to assume that it's from the year 800.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have given more flexibility, I realized later.
Yeah, there were some options. Like I didn't come across with my very quick research anything that would have netted me more than a couple hundred more coins. So it wasn't a massive difference. But the problem that I was running into is like anything older than the church converted into a library that I ended up finding, it was just giving me the century. Like I couldn't find anything more than the century.
Right.
And we needed the 50-year range. So ultimately, this was the oldest thing where I could get a reasonably exact year. It was also just like the research itself was confusing because the sites were mostly in Dutch and I was like translating them into American.
Into American.
Translating them into American.
You're translating them from Dutch into American?
I said it. Yeah, I can't read, you know, English. But yeah, so it was tough finding the exact answers. But, you know, I knew that ultimately the key was to just keep moving and to not waste time to earn a tiny bit more when I was already going to earn plenty enough to keep moving.
And then something bad happens to you.
Oh, yeah. Do you have nothing to say on your end? I mean, Null's end is pretty straightforward.
I mean, we just kept going.
I mean, we were just kind of hanging. I mean, you can sort of see me starting to lose my mind a little bit at this point. Like, it's sort of an interesting, I mean, there's so much B-roll of me just like singing little songs and doing weird little things. And a lot of it doesn't make it in. But I feel like you start to see me like going a little bit crazy in a few of these clips.
Well, from your POV, it's not looking great.
No.
Because up until this moment, I have a pretty reliable strategy to be able to keep staying in front of you.
Yep, absolutely.
So I think it's right for you to lose your mind. And any failure is not my fault. And I would like to collect sympathy points.
Right.
I mean, look, you complain about bad luck all the time. And I'm often like, I don't know. But I will admit that you did really get fucked by an act of God on this one.
Even more literal act of God.
It is true. It is true. A literal act of God. I mean, I will say you could have attempted to like hide and sneak onto the train that was leaving in 20 minutes or so.
Yeah. There are some minor things I think I could have done differently in Sertogenbosch.
There's a Dutch employee who said it. It was like,
I believe that she said it was like
Sertogenbosch.
I think it's like, it makes an SH sound.
That sounds right.
You know what? We're just going to embarrass ourselves further.
Apostrophe S Sertogenbosch. That's what I called it.
Yeah, there are definitely some things that I could have done differently in apostrophe S Sertogenbosch. But like, I think my thinking at the time was just like, anything more or less would have been, you know, Hail Mary trying to sneak past y'all within the station, which I was, at least at the time, unconvinced could be successful. I think in retrospect, I should have given it a shot. But the reason why I didn't was genuinely because until the very, very, very last moment, I just thought that y'all were stuck up the line a bit.
Right, right, yeah. And this doesn't totally make it in, so expand on this for the audience.
Well, so all of the indications of, like, there were a bunch of trains that were canceled. And when you looked up those trains, they would just show canceled, and they would no longer show any arrival time to any station. Mm-hmm. Like, usually it'll show you kind of a line with all the different stations and the expected arrival time versus the scheduled arrival time. It didn't show, like, hey, we got to here at this time, and then we canceled. It just showed overall canceled. So how I perceived that was that from the moment that it showed canceled, y'all's train would have stopped where it was, like my train did. Because my train, you know, just stopped and then it was canceled. So I imagined that the same thing had happened to y'all up the line a bit, and therefore you were dumped off 30 minutes prior. Of course, that's not what happened. What happened in the end is your train was canceled from where my train stopped.
Right.
It just so happened that my train was already in the spot where, I guess, the issue started when it got canceled.
It's true.
Because what happened, so in a little more detail, so I had heard rumblings of the fact that some bad weather was going to come through, because actually while we were filming, a bunch of Nebula creators, like a bunch of European Nebula creators, had been at a get together in Amsterdam. And I actually headed up to that after we finished this season for the last night. So I'd been in like the group chat for that. And I'd seen messages from, I think it was actually Jason from Not Just Bikes, who lives there, who was like, oh, we're going to get some really big storms tonight. So watch out for your flights and stuff. I was like, oh, but I'm not that far from here. And actually, I think what it was specifically he said was like, we were supposed to get some pretty big storms, but it looks like they kind of changed track or something,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not far from that. And then it was like 30 minutes later, we pull into apostrophe S Sertogenbosch, and the train, you know, stops and the heavens open up. It was a very fast and furious storm. And I'm just sitting there, and like the train was no longer moving. It was clear that we were delayed, but I figured that was just because of the storm, and they didn't want to get, I don't know, blown off the tracks or something. And I was having a lovely time watching the British Grand Prix on my phone.
Yes.
And I was so excited because the train timing of this long train to Breda coincided almost perfectly with when the Grand Prix was on, and it was a long train. So I thought, oh, I'm going to be able to watch like this whole, because I almost never miss a Grand Prix watching it. So I thought I was going to be able to watch the whole thing, but nature said no. So not only did I lose my run, I also lost my Formula One viewing. even worse.
We cut out so much footage of you talking about the British Grand Prix.
There
much more extensive discussion. Lots of B-roll of you watching the Grand Prix, which I'm pretty sure we couldn't have legally shown.
Adam, you say these things, and what you don't realize is how much of the audience would really love to see that kind of thing.
You gave all these details about, like, Verstappen passed.
No. Like, Norris passed Verstappen. That's what's important.
Yeah, Lando Norris passed Verstappen is what you said. Yeah.
By the time this comes out, that was a race that happened like 2 months ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it was a good race.
They don't need your play-by-play.
Yeah, they do. But okay, you're going to get all these tweets. This is just like every time Adam shuts down my airplane logistics talk, and then everyone's tweeting like, you don't realize we actually want this. And you're going to get the same thing.
Okay.
I promise you. I don't think you deserve any hate for this or anything like that. But I'm just saying, this is one of these things where I understand that this might not be fascinating to you, but that is a disconnect between you and at least a large contingent with the audience.
Here's what I think. I think it's a vocal minority.
Yes.
I think it's a vocal minority of people who would like to hear about the Formula One.
One day we'll release a special Formula One edition of Jet Lag the Game where we include all of Sam talking about Formula One.
I want Oscar Piastri to come on Jet Lag the Game. I'm saying that officially. If anyone can get us Oscar Piastri, he is definitely... Okay, y'all are going to not understand this, but like, okay, I'm going to say this to the very niche audience here. Watch Grill the Grid, the geography episode, where Oscar Piastri absolutely nails it, and tell me that he's not a Wendover viewer. Like, that guy definitely watches Wendover. He gives the vibes. So if anyone can get us Oscar Piastri, we'll bring him on Jet Lag the Game. Okay, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Great. Whoever that is, get him on Jet Lag.
Okay. Great. I'm glad that we filled our quota of talking about Oscar Piastri, because that's really important.
Great. Now let's talk about some airplanes.
Airplanes.
All right. Okay. You got caught, though.
Yeah, we got to move on. Okay.
I mean, it was very funny in the moment of like us being like, he's doing an incredible job of hiding. Like, oh my gosh, he's just like, where could he be? And then you were just standing there.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we also cut down our section a lot, but we were like frantically running up and we were like, should we get on the train? We were like, we went to like several different platforms. We were freaking out.
Yeah, we almost got on a train that you weren't on and just like completely self-owned.
That would have been embarrassing. Man.
That is such a peak jet lag kind of thing to just like self-immolate.
Yeah.
Out of panic.
Absolutely.
But you had looked at the track and we tried to figure out what exactly had happened here, because you looked at the tracks and you were like, they're not here. Which is why you were being so chill.
Well, yeah, because I knew when your train was scheduled to get in. But the thing is, because, like I was talking about earlier, because the tracking website just showed canceled, it didn't show me that, like, your train was delayed or anything. So I just, I guess, assumed that your train would get in at the scheduled time. So I go to the platform at the scheduled time. You're not there. Therefore, I think, great, in the clear, they're not here. Their train was, as I previously thought, canceled and stopped before. I guess the chronology is it was right before that that I realized that maybe your train didn't get stopped before, because I'd finally seen the thing that said signal fault between apostrophe S for Triggenbosch and Tilburg, I think.
Yeah.
So I was like, panic, but immediately rectify that panic with, okay, their train would be here. It's not here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I just didn't think about the delay potential, I guess.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting thing because originally we had in the footage of you being like, I don't think their train stops here. But then later you were like, I think their train does stop here. We just felt like it was confusing because it was like, you say their train won't stop here. And we obviously, we didn't have any idea what was going on. So like, there wasn't a clip to cut to of us being like, our train will stop where he is. So it just ended up being confusing. So we ended up just mostly using the footage of you being like, I think that their train might stop here. And then you looking at the track and realizing that, thinking that it hadn't.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah, we do have to wrap up because behind the scenes thing, I'm going to film a very exciting thing with a very exciting channel next week, which means that we're double stacking this episode and we have to record another episode right after this. I'm spending all this time explaining it and not wrapping up this episode. But anyways, Ben.
We didn't cover Ben's run though. Ben's run.
Yeah, we need to cover Ben's
run.
Oh,
sorry. Yeah.
I'm segueing. You have so much doubt in my host skills.
Sorry. I thought you were ending. I thought you were wrapping up.
No. We have to talk about Ben and his burpees.
No, I know. Sorry, I should have trusted you more.
That's all right. Ben, how much panic and dread did you feel about pulling this card as your first?
Well, you know, not a lot. Here's the thing. I go down to Eindhoven because that's the only place I could go, given all the signal faults. I pull that card. I didn't for one second consider doing the estimate your city's population thing. Because frankly, I already did that and I nailed it.
Too much of a risk.
And I don't want to, you know, ruin my reputation there.
Understandable.
I've never done a burpee. Turns out, it's one of those things where it feels like it's more than the sum of its parts in terms of how horrible it is. I feel like doing 50 push-ups and jumping 50 times sounds kind of tolerable, but then when you combine them, something horrible happens.
Yeah, I do think there's a certain sort of magic in the alchemy.
So they were a lot harder than I thought they would be. Fortunately, I was able to split them across two stations and humiliate myself in two locations. And people were really, let me tell you, when you were doing burpees in the corner of a train station,
filming yourself,
people will look at you.
Well, they just don't understand that you're a professional athlete.
Well,
well, the thing is, what was very funny about it to me was that it looked like I was like an influencer filming like a workout video in public.
Yeah, like a fitness influencer.
I was like, all these people are like, look at this fitness influencer who cannot do a burpee at all. Like, which would be a great career pivot for me.
Yeah, I do think that'd be really good. That's a good idea for a TikTok channel. It's just like a fitness influencer who cannot do the exercises.
Who's just wildly out of shape.
Yeah.
But I'm still doing the obnoxious thing of like doing it in public to like impress everybody. Yeah. So that was a rough situation for me. But I eventually pull it out and I make it on my train to Zaventem, Belgium.
Yes.
What's interesting here, I think it was worth mentioning, is you really are just continuing the exact route that I had planned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is like, I'm sure you were feeling great because like we were aligned in our...
Yeah. And, you know, this was like a bit of a strategy for me to position myself in the place where you would, you know, pick up the baton and keep going further. So at least at the very first moments, I was feeling great because there was a chance that you could have headed to Germany from, I think, Eindhoven. And I was glad to see that you didn't do that because like you had a somewhat viable route through Germany, but rather you chose the route that would continue going through my territory rather than Adam's, which I liked. And it was the right call because you don't want to set up Adam for a better run after that. But I was glad to see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then, I mean, it's relatively clear at the end, but like then things get so bad for us so fast.
Yeah, I started to feel a little less good.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can kind of see it happen of like we were like 15 minutes behind Ben and we were like, oh no, we're going to catch him at the first station. That's so sad. And then like an hour later, we're like, oh, we're fucked.
Yeah. I mean, the timing of the rest period really was rough for you guys. And the rest period, especially in this game, can like really, it can like totally eliminate someone's lead, but it can also drastically expand it.
Yeah.
It was a hilariously catastrophic confluence of circumstances that led to that. Because it's like we were 15 minutes behind you. And it turned into 3 hours just because of the perfect confluence of like a train that got in 1 minute too late, another train that was sold out, just like these tiny, tiny, like, you know, scheduling and logistical things that led to this massive. I would love to be on the receiving end of one of these things one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not good. It was not good.
Hopefully I'm not coming across as too salty this episode. I am a little salty.
Look, you earned the salt, I think, on this one.
Okay, thank you.
On this one, yeah, I think it's fair.
Well, I mean, we're excited to talk more about and show you the consequences of that catastrophic confluence of circumstances, but that is, unfortunately, next week. So this is probably a pretty good place to end this one, right?
This is where we leave you.
And we will be back with the Layover podcast recorded starting approximately 2 or 3 minutes from now, but released to you a week from now for episode 5.
Episode 5.
We will see you there.
We're excited.
See you there.
Goodbye.
Bye.